Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Rob Foster, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of the Navy. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Jimmy Norcross. So, Rob, the Navy views information, data, and technology as strategic assets that play a critical role in its meeting its mission. To that end, would you tell us more about your IT priorities, your key strategic IT priorities?
Absolutely. So, as it relates to data, I think there's a lot of people, technology, and processes that touch that data. So some of the goals out there are workforce excellence across the IT domain and definitely in the cybersecurity space. I think you have to have some level of governance, and I would suggest a lightweight governance, because if it's too burdensome, people will avoid it. And if it's not visible enough in some cases, you won't ask the right questions at the right level. So lightweight governance is important. The cybersecurity piece and cybersecurity management is another objective, and that deals with both workforce as well as operations as well as visibility and policies. The information management as it relates to data, and I think that was one of your key points, is how is the data managed? Where is it stored? What is its risk? And I would say not all data is created equal. In some cases, we actually try and treat it the same. And as we've started to look at moving to the cloud, that's one of the determining factors, is what is the classification of that data. So I think that's going forward important. The other one I think would be technology and innovation. And so that's your delivery side. What we can't do, in my mind, is hold on to the old method of delivery, whether that be own it and operate it or outsource it or whatever those decisions have to be made. We can't rely upon the fact that the government is building technology when in some cases we need to be an adopter of what the technology is out there and industry is already provided.
So, Rob, as a follow-up, what are the key internal and external drivers and trends that shape and inform your IT strategy?
So from the internal side, I think having a governance that allows us to look enterprise-wide is very, very critical, because we have, in some cases, I would say optimization that could be better utilized if you look at it from an enterprise perspective. Just one minor example, an enterprise license agreement would give you the resources that were otherwise utilized in a sub-optimized way. You could roll that up and then maybe plow that into something. So from an internal perspective, I think you need to know what you have, you need to know where your spend is, and I think you need to know where you're going, and then somehow roll that up to optimize it. From an external perspective, I would suggest there's two areas. Number one would be the technology innovations. That's number one, and I'll break that down in a moment. And the second one would be the workforce and their expectations. So unlike when I came on board many years ago, a BlackBerry was both a status symbol and exactly, yeah, it was a status symbol, and in some cases, you know, just to be put on your hip, right?
Yeah.
So the folks that we're hiring today and the mission that they have to accomplish is very mobile. Their desire is to be mobile, and quite frankly, their first form factor is mobile. And when we tether them to a desk or we tether them to a system that is not user-friendly, I would suggest to you that we won't get the best and brightest. We also won't optimize their productivity. On the technology side, that's the people side. On the technology side, I think we have to be able to embrace some level of migration from where we are to where we're going to be. And that's being done, but I think some of the resource constraints are helping us or preventing us from going as fast as we could.
Rob, you mentioned the cloud. I'd like to have a little discussion about the cloud. The Navy, like the other services and broadly across the federal government, continue to run numerous legacy applications, many that are deeply rooted in the departmental computing environment. Would you tell us about your efforts to migrate to the cloud? What's the Navy's approach to the cloud? Maybe some examples. And how these migrations progress, and how's that going in your view?
Sure, Jimmy. So I think the cloud migration, as I talked a little bit earlier, is dependent upon the data and the data as it relates to what is the classification. So well, there's been a lot of level two data that has been exposed to the cloud because it publicly facing is no problem. It's not a challenge. I think the other piece of the puzzle would be when you look at the security associated with the higher levels, we have to work through the operational and concept of operations side. So that's one piece, and then the other piece would also be the application's ability to migrate to the cloud. So there's the technical migration. So what's gone on is we've done some data center consolidation, which also lets us know where the data is, how it's being hosted, some cost factors. Then we segregate that out. We migrate to a consolidated position in a data center. Then we also look at the complexities of the application and the application owner. And then we look at where the data is, where it needs to be. And as that's being deconstructed, we're also looking at the concept of operations, in my words, command and control, of when the data is hosted somewhere, how does the operator or how do the operators manage the data, have visibility of the data, and understand the transit aspects of the data from a security at rest, from a security in transit perspective. And if there is a spill or a breach, how is it mitigated? And that's your incident response piece. So there's been outreach with the application owners to help them learn how to migrate, and that was well received, and that's happening. There has been discussions on cloud access points as it relates to the ability to get into the cloud of the vendor. And then I think we're still digging into the contract aspects of when that data is there, how is it going to be managed, and some of the aspects associated with command and control.
Oh, thank you very much. So as a follow-up, what are some of the key benefits and challenges of migrating to the cloud, and how are you addressing those challenges? And to the extent, like for your thoughts on the security aspects of the cloud as well. Some seem real, some seem more perceived. So I'd be interested in your thoughts there as well.
So, the real and perceived is only in one person's mind. So I've got to be careful with that. I think this goes back to some discussions, again, about the data. The data is absolutely critical to our mission to make decisions in a timely manner. And as you move farther up the level of security, I think the risk calculus is slightly different than if it would be lower in the data stack. So if it's publicly available, you're going to go with the lowest cost option because there's very little risk. As you go higher up into the national security information and that data is going to be hosted somewhere else, now you have to have a prove it scenario. And I think the challenges are how we're organized to, again, do the command and control. I think that's a big deal that we have to have everybody on board with that. I think we have to have policies in place that allow that to happen. We have to have the contract written in such a way that there's some cost sharing and some risk sharing, and it can't all be on one side and on all the other. And I don't know if we're quite there yet in some of our vehicles, because oftentimes we try and defer that responsibility. And in the case of Department of Defense data, we can't defer the responsibility of ownership. We always own it. Mm-hmm. So how do you mitigate that on a cost basis? But how do you also mitigate it on a trust and risk basis? And that, I think, is one of the challenges going forward.
Yeah, so, Rob, can we discuss the Navy's approach and progress to modernizing its IT infrastructure, with such things as virtualization and data center consolidation?
Sure. So we've definitely done some data center consolidation, as I mentioned earlier. I think if I can just break that one down for a minute. So there was a lot of definitional disparities, in my word, as to what a data center is. And over the few years, that definition has changed, which has changed your baseline of what's in and what's out. And so the Department of Defense, specifically the Navy, when we started doing some activities around the NMCI model, we did a consolidation in 2010 when the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, FDCCI, came out around 2010. So there was a lot of precursors to this data center consolidation that the Navy had already done. And when you boil it all down, you have about 381 data centers as that definition has changed a few times. But from there, if you just deduct the new or not so new, the special processing nodes, which was classified as a data center based on the criteria, but when you look at what it does, so an example might be I have to be co-located to a medical device because of latency, or I have to have it close because of some other functional requirement, but it still meets the criteria of a data center. That really can't be consolidated because it's tied to the function. Another one might be a simulation opportunity. So you just got to have those data centers right next to the simulators for that function. So those special processing nodes, when you take those out of the total, you know, the Department of the Navy is down to about, you know, 188, and we've closed 71 of them. So of those 188. So you really, when you hear numbers, I think you need to ask, what is the definition of that number? You have to understand, why is that number there? And in some cases, there's a good reason for it that might not be known to both the general public as well as others. So that's the data center side. Is there anything else that I can help amplify on that?
Just the virtualization, is that part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's definitely part of it. And I think we've been working on virtualization, but again, that's back to the application, mm-hmm. and how does that application work? How was it designed? Yeah. How was it architected? And there requires some level of investment to make that application be a virtual app. You can wrap it. You can move it around. And I just don't know if you get as much optimization out of it. Yeah.
What's the Navy's ingest strategy for the joint regional security stacks and the joint management system? JRSS and JMS.
Right. So the Joint Regional Security Stack, JRSS, the Department of the Navy a few years ago, prior to my arrival, they have put a significant amount of money, energy, and resources in upgrading the security posture. And to that point, we are where we need to be on the JRSS. As JRSS matures, we've been providing our requirements. We've been working with the department on a hand-in-glove method, and we're going to be migrating to JRSS at 2.0. As they enhance that capability, we'll be as an on-ramp moving into that.
How is U.S. Navy enhancing its IT security across the enterprise? We will ask Navy CIO Rob Foster when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.